Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark. Rolled out to my
Chevrolet. I climbed out. Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and I'm here at your service for the next hour. If you have a car question or a car problem, you're having a problem with your air conditioning, maybe you got an estimate you don't understand, maybe you're trying to compare a couple of estimates and they don't make any sense to you, anything in that arena, I can probably help you with. I can help you decide whether you should do your transmission flush this summer or next summer, and those kinds of things. 602-508-0960. Now's the time to get in. The lines are wide open. You have a 100% chance of getting through. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. If you have an issue with a transmission, Bob or Steve at Quality Transmission in Tempe is who you need to call. They have many, many years of experience. They don't guess with your money. They know how to repair transmissions. They're not going to tell you they're going to have to spend $400 taking your transmission apart in 2,000 pieces and then give you an estimate, which means you're locked to them. They don't do that. They're located in Tempe on McClintock, just north of University. No matter where you live, they're worth the drive. And I'm proud to tell you that they're on our best car repair shop list, and that's available at marksalem.com. Oh, did Mark have a bad week? From a business point of view, I got a complaint. And this was way back in March. And Michael writes, I just had my car in your shop, and I'm going to have to bring it back in. I wanted to get an AC replaced with no success. Instead, dye was run all through all day long with no results. I told them that there would be none for it because someone's used dye over and over and over again, and that is not the problem. There was also a grind and noise, and your staff determined it was bad pulleys, but the problem is still there. So I'm extremely unhappy. I just wasted $500. I get to bring it back, waste another day. I'm not planning on reporting this. I promise never to bring my truck back, and I'm going to tell everybody that you're an idiot. And he's going to boycott the business and all kinds of stuff. Well, he says on one hand that he's going to bring the car in back in, and then on the other hand he says he's never going to darken our doorway again. So, and he didn't ask me for anything. And so I was kind of confused. Well, that was way back in March, so I kind of watched and watched and watched, and this is all happening on Facebook, by the way. So I write him, I say, hey, Michael, I noticed you never came back in, and I was wondering what happened to your AC problem. Did you ever get the grinding noise handled? The repair order says that the air conditioning was working perfectly when you left, and they couldn't find any leaks, and also says the two belt pulleys were replaced to fix the grinding noise. If you've taken it somewhere else and you have receipts from another repair shop that addresses the same issues that we did, I would like to see them. I'm thinking that what that says to Michael is that, you know, if we did something wrong, we'll give your money back. But have you had it fixed? I mean, we got two different issues. We replaced an idler pulley and a tensioner pulley for a noise, and you said that didn't fix your car. And then we also worked on your air conditioning, and you said that's not what you wanted. So I was just kind of reaching out to him saying, hey, you know, let's have some conversation. Now, I ask him, if you have any receipts from another shop that addresses these issues, please let me know. Well, Mark, that was 3 months ago. I wasn't happy because I told him what I wanted done, and it wasn't done. I wanted a new AC unit. Then your staff, which is under par and needs some customer service training, made me feel as if I didn't know what I was talking about. You see, Mark, I'm a certified AC tech, and I know a couple of things. When it comes down to this, I won't be back. And so I'm thinking to myself, I ask you if you've had those two issues looked at. So I go back to staff and I said, okay, let's go over this again. And they say, yes, he did come in and he did want us to replace his entire air conditioning unit. Well, I looked up, he's got a Dodge truck. And entire could very well mean at the minimum $2,000 and up higher. The compressor, the hoses, the evaporator, the expansion valve, the condenser, the belts, the refrigeration, the controls. I mean, all this stuff. And I said, okay, so what'd you do? And they said, well, it came in with refrigerant, but it was low. So we sucked out the refrigerant, and there was a difference of about 8 ounces, what he had and what he was supposed to have. So we pulled a vacuum on it, let it sit for 30 minutes, and it was fine. It didn't lose any vacuum. And so we put the amount in that it calls for. We went and drove it, and it was blowing like 42 degrees out of the center vent. And folks, 55 or less is what every shop looks for. But he was mad at us because he wanted the whole system fixed. And our position to him was, is we can't find anything that would justify spending all that money. But then again, we didn't know that he was a, what did he say here? He's a certified air conditioning tech, and he knows a couple things. I think the biggest thing for me would be is, if you're a certified AC tech, what the heck am I doing working on your truck? Oh, so that wasn't a, you know, and I reached out to him. And folks, I think a lot of shops in town, I'm not the only one, a lot of shops in town, if we make a mistake, we'll own up to it. We'll give you your money back. But it's really nice if you come back in and you say, Mark, you tried to fix the noise, and here's the bill for $200 worth of pulleys. It wasn't fixed, and then I took it over here, and this guy replaced the water pump, and now the noise is gone. So can we talk about that $200 worth of pulleys? And I would say, we put all the old parts in your car. Do you still have the old ones so I can personally see them? And they go, yeah, I do. So I look at them, and I go, oh, my goodness, these aren't bad. And I would have just given you your money back. Okay, so the second part of my business week is I had to let an employee go. And in the car repair business, we have to trust our employees, and in many other businesses too. I'm sure many of you out there are the same way. This employee was warned a while back about diagnostic time being unusually high compared to all the rest of the guys, and sometimes just downright unfair to find a bad fuse. We're not going to charge the customer $80 to find a bad fuse. We're better than that. So we warn this technician, you have to maintain control. You have the ability to give us your diagnostic time. So the first warning went in one ear and out the other. The second warning went in one ear and out the other. And the third warning was given by my wife and my daughters, who wrote final warning on it. And they said to him, this is it, buddy. Now, typically, you only get one chance. But this young man, I felt like was worth two chances. And then the girls gave him three chances. So here's what happened. Customer comes in, and the vehicle's checked in at 10:30. 10:30. Now, keep track of that. The estimate is given to the customer at 11:19. Let's call it 11:20. No, 11:09. Let's call it 11:10. So between 10:30 and 11:10 is 40 minutes. Here's what happens in 40 minutes. In 40 minutes, the car, the repair order is written up, the keys are tagged, and then the car is tagged, and then the repair order is, we make a soft copy, and at that point, the technician's called forward and said, here's your next car. The technician gets the keys and his work copy. He goes out and gets in the car. He's supposed to drive it to verify the whatever the concern was. And he pulls it into his bay. He diagnoses the car. After he diagnoses the car, he has to price the labor and the parts. So he has to look up the labor and he has to look up the parts. He has to price those, and then he has to give them to the service writer. The service writer then puts them into an estimate format, and our customer was sitting in the lobby. And after they get it down to, you need this part and this labor, and this is the diagnostic time, this is the sales tax, your total amount will be this or less. So the customer got the estimate at 11:10, 40 minutes. And he wrote up that he wanted $100, which is 1 hour, $100 in diagnostic time. $100. Well, that didn't go over very well at all. So that was on a Friday. And then he said to me during this process, he said, I also found a bad connection at the blower motor, because the car came in because it didn't have any blower motor. The air conditioning didn't blow out the vents. Pretty simple. Here's the end of the story. On Monday, he's terminated. We call the customer back in on Monday, and we plug the old part back in, because he put one part on it, the old resistor. We plug the old resistor back in, and it works fine, which tells us clearly that the bad connection at the blower motor was the problem. So he didn't need this $200 item. The technician misdiagnosed it. He misbid it. And then when he did find the real problem, he didn't plug the old part back in to see if it actually works. And then to put gravy on the potatoes, the car had a recall for this same thing, and the customer could go back and get all this work free. So he now works somewhere else. I don't know where he works. But this is kind of disheartening because it doesn't happen very often, but it happens to all of us. So the end of the story is we gave the customer all of his money back, and we left the car repaired. Gave him all of his money back and said, we screwed up, we're sorry, that's the way it is. So that's what a week in the life of a car repair shop owner is. 602-508-0960. Air conditioning problems galore. The question is if you get an estimate, what are you looking for on the estimate?
2 minutes.
So the other day, a customer calls me and says, I got a $900 estimate for an air conditioning concern. And I said, do you know exactly what that is? What's in that estimate? Well, just you know, the manifold set and something else and Freon and the labor. And I says, well, I really need to know what I'm bidding against, but why don't you call them and ask them? Say, exactly what is it? Calls back and says, just $900. And I says, okay, well, I'll write it up based on their diagnosis. Now, keep in mind that I'm going off their diagnosis, so I write it up and ours was $1,200. And she says, well, why the difference? And I says, I don't know. I said, I've got specific parts, specific labor, I got tax, shop supplies, and environmental charges, and I'm going to assume that you're all the way out of Freon, so I've got money enough for all the refrigerant. She says, oh, no, I'm going to go there. And I said, okay, I said, I'll tell you what I'll do, though, just so that I can learn. And really, I said that so she could learn.
1 minute.
I said, I'll give you an oil change free if you'll bring me their bill. So she brought me their bill, and their bill was $11 more than mine. And they had had just the parts and the labor, but they didn't have the Freon, they didn't have the diagnostic charge, they didn't have nothing. And our bills were $11 apart. So that's how important it is for everybody to just bid the appropriate stuff. Just bid the appropriate stuff. Okay, 602-508-0960. If you have any car questions, car problems, I can help you. Let's say that you and your wife are fighting about whether you should throw it in neutral or not at a traffic light. I can settle that. I'm always going to side with the wife anyway. Let's say that you're wondering how you check the temperature to find out whether you're in parameters of your air conditioning. I can help you with that. And maybe, should I use synthetic oil, that $6 quart stuff, or should I stay with the old conventional stuff? Any of those questions are fair game. And I won't tell you what you want to hear. I'll tell you what I truly believe and what I do on my own mom and dad's car. We'll be right back right after this.
Mark Salem has a friend at Thunderbird Automotive, and so do you. His name is Tom Fletcher. If you live in the north of California,
this message is brought to you by the American Veterinary Medical Association and your local veterinarians.
The mechanic raised up from under my hood and he shook his head and said, this ain't good. Timing belts done shrunk, one size too small.
Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Thank you very much for calling in. I'm going to get to you in just 1 second here. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by a great shop in Mesa, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're located on Main and Stapley, south and just east. Thompson's been in business since 1970, and they can handle all major and minor repairs, foreign, domestic vehicles, gas, diesel. And they're a AAA-approved shop. They're an ASE-certified Blue Seal shop, which means he's in the top 10% of repair shops. Brian and Thelma, husband and wife, they take care of the folks at Thompson's Auto Repair. So if you're looking for a place, you don't have a shop, and you live in Mesa, then may I suggest Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, Stapley and Main. Mark, good morning to you. You're first up. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning. I heard your advertisement occasionally, and it had something to do with increasing your gas mileage by, I don't know, quite a bit of a percent. I was 150 or... I was curious what that was all about.
That's a great question. It was actually a tongue-in-cheek thing. Here's what we were serious.
Okay.
If you let me install my gizmo in your car, I'll double your fuel economy. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a very, very loud horn underneath the driver's seat, and I'm going to wire it to your brake pedal.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to learn to anticipate traffic. You're going to learn to coast. You're going to learn throw it into neutral. You're going to learn how to feather the throttle so that you don't go too fast, because every time you hit the brake, I'm going to blow this extremely loud horn underneath your bottom end. And we know that testing has, here's something you can do yourself for free. On your way to work, count your brake applications, and every morning try to do one less.
Gotcha.
And it has, yes, it has to do with your accelerator pedal and your right foot, but it has more to do with your left foot. As you streak off when the light turns green and you throttle up hard only to stop a half a mile later, you've wasted all that energy. But if you were in the right lane and you left early enough for work, then you could anticipate that light and you can coast right through it when it turns green. So stop looking at the car in front of you and look a half a mile ahead and try to decide, you know, as you see the hand flashing and it says 2-1, you know you're not going to make it, so you might as well just back off. So that's what it's all about. It was just an effort to generate conversation.
That's excellent. Well, the thing is, I drive literally 75 to 80,000 miles a year. I do morning newspaper up and courier service during the day delivery. So I was really looking, and actually, all the things you just mentioned without a horn on my brake, I do those anyway. Yeah. Anyway, well, I appreciate that. That is funny, though. That's fine. I just thought, man, is that really true? Man, that would be great. I could save a fortune. You know?
Mark, I do have a B plan, but I need your wife's signature. Some of the husbands wanted to bring their wife's car in. Uh-huh. And they wanted the B plan, which is we hook a coil underneath the seat and we electrify the seat every time you touch the brake. But I need your wife's signature first before we pull that off, okay?
Yeah, that's too good. Hey, well, thanks for your time, though. That was funny.
Thank you, Mark. All right, Mary, you're up next. Mary, how can I help you today?
Yes, good morning. I've got a Jeep Cherokee. It's not a Grand Cherokee. It's a Jeep Cherokee, six-cylinder, automatic. I'm having trouble with my AC. I took it back to the shop because it was under warranty and it wasn't cool, and so they said the compressor was bad. They put a new compressor in, and I had it for a little while, and I heard a and I had no AC. So I took it back, and they said, oh, you blew the line.
Okay.
The pressure is building up. So they thought the switch was bad. They said, no, maybe the switch isn't bad. Then they said,
Wait a minute, Mary.
I had a plug in the line.
Okay, hold on. It doesn't make any difference what they did. I want to know today, does it blow cold at all today?
It's still doing the same thing.
Okay.
I took it to another shop because I lost total confidence in this other place, because they had it for 2 weeks and they kept trying this and that.
Well, Mary, I don't even know what the same thing is. Tell me the symptoms. Because if you can tell me what everybody did, but clearly it didn't work for you, but what is it doing? Is it clicking on and off? Is it sometimes cold, sometimes hot? Does it work only in the morning?
I don't get a chance to find out, because I turn it on and I go maybe a block and I hear shh, shh, and the Freon blows out.
Okay, all right. Well, then I can tell you what's wrong with it. I just need the symptoms. What's happening is that in the front of the radiator is the condenser. That's where we condense the Freon. The condenser is warm. It's downright hot sometimes. We need lots of airflow against the condenser. We need air to carry the heat away from the condenser. And it's right in front of the radiator. And, of course, you know, Mary, that the radiator creates heat itself.
Right.
So here's this poor condenser out there in the middle of the front of the car, and behind it is something that's generating a lot of heat. It generates a lot of heat. The high side on your air conditioning system is skyrocketing, and at the back of your compressor you have a relief valve. And when it gets over 400 pounds, it goes psst, psst.
Right.
Okay, so we have to fix the airflow problem. Could be a fan clutch, could be a plugged-up condenser, could be a plugged-up radiator. But here, I want you to try this, Mary. Get on the freeway. Don't even turn your air on. Just turn it on in the morning and make sure that it'll blow cold, then get on the freeway. And I'll bet at 65, 75 miles an hour, it works until you slow down and get on surface streets, because when you're going down the freeway at 65, 70 miles an hour, there's enough wind blowing through the condenser and the radiator to carry the heat away. But when you get on the city streets and it's stop and go, stop and go, that's why the fan is such an important consideration. We want to draw air through those two components.
Okay, can I tell you something?
Go ahead.
So this last shop that I went to, they said it's the fan clutch is bad, so they replaced the fan clutch.
Okay.
Well, so I did it again. So then I brought it back yesterday, and he said, okay, now we're going to put this so that this fan automatically turns on. I've got it wired so it automatically comes on as soon as you turn the AC on.
Okay.
It will always come on.
Okay.
It's still doing the same thing.
Okay.
You just hardly move, and I turn it on, and it all goes.
All right.
Blows the line.
Well, someone has to find out what the pressure is that's causing it to blow. Because it could be a bad switch. Maybe the switch is supposed to blow at 425 and it's blown at 325. What you're telling me, too, is that you have two fans. You have an electric fan and you have a fan clutch, which is a mechanical fan.
Right.
So you've had the fan clutch replaced and he's wired the electric fan directly to the compressor.
Correct.
In reality, that fan is already wired to the compressor. That fan sits there and does nothing until the pressure on the high side rises, and when it rises, then it turns on the electric cooling fan. Now, I agree with him. For diagnostic purposes, I would have wired it straight through. But you have an airflow problem. Maybe somebody needs to take the grill off the thing and drive it with no grill on it. Maybe underneath the front there's an air dam that sticks down, and that air dam's supposed to redirect the air upwards. Maybe that air dam's gone. Maybe after hitting so many parking blocks when your son or your husband drives it, they've knocked off that air dam in the front. It's an airflow problem. What part of town do you live in? What part of town do you live in?
Central Phoenix.
Okay. Central Phoenix North, Central Phoenix Center, Central Phoenix South.
Like 12th Street and McDowell.
There's a guy, 12th Street and McDowell, isn't there a repair shop right there?
Well, I'm taking it to one close by 16th Street near Osborne.
Okay. All right, hang on. I'm going to think about this. I only got 10 seconds in this segment, but I'll talk to you on the other side of the break. And Bob and Gary, you stay right there, Salvador, too, because I'm going to get you as well. We'll be right back right after this.
Investors.
Get old tape and a color TV. Get a backseat bar and reclining seats. And just pay once a month like you do your rent. Well, I figured it up in over a period of time. This $4,000 car of mine cost $14,000.99.
Yes, sir. Good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. And we're talking about cars. Mary, I'm going to get to you in just a second. But this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. They're a full service, family-owned auto repair shop, 38th Avenue and Indian School. If you live Indian School South, between I-17 and the 101 to the west, and you don't have a repair shop, you just can't do better than Larry Harker's Auto. 38th Avenue and Indian School, Bob and Ellen Frisbee own Larry Harker's Auto, and I'm proud to recommend them. Folks, at marksalem.com is the list of the best car repair shops, as well as car repair shops that I've removed for being bad boys. So I have a $5,000 guarantee that says you're going to be happy. And the Better Business Bureau, if they tell the shop to give you a refund or fix your car and the shop doesn't, I will. Up to $5,000. And that covers transmissions. But you have to go through the dispute resolution process at the Better Business Bureau. Mary, I want you to go. First of all, there's a problem here, Mary, because you've got so many shops involved, so many cooks in the kitchen, that at the end of the day, there's going to be egg on somebody's face. That's a battle you'll have to fight on your own, and hopefully you paid with a credit card, because at the end of the day, you're going to have somebody's going to finally fix this, and then you're going to know who was guessing with your money and who wasn't. But I want you to go over and wave the proverbial red cape at Bill at 25th Street Automotive at Indian School and 25th Street. You walk in there, Mary, and you ask for Bill, and you say, I've been told that you couldn't fix the broadside of a barn. Mark Salem says that there is no one that can fix this car. But I've got an air conditioning problem, and I've got this little psst, psst. So give him that symptom and tell him it happens a lot, and they've been working on the electric cooling fans and on the thing. And say, Bill, do you want to take this on? Because it's going to take, Mark says it's going to take a top-notch technician to fix this Jeep Cherokee. And that's what we call waving the red flag at the bull, and Bill will happily take your car. So 25th Street Auto, 4112 North 25th Street. So it's Indian School and 25th Street. Bob, you're up next. Bob, how can I help you today?
Hi, Mark. How often do you think spark plugs should be replaced in modern cars? And is it worth it to buy platinum spark plugs?
Yeah, it's kind of like oil. You have conventional oil, semi-synthetic, and synthetic. The difference is the oil change interval. The conventional oil, we still need 3,000-5,000 mile changes. Semi-synthetic, 7,500, and full synthetics, you know, depending on the car maker, you can go 15,000 miles, which is a bad idea, I think. Let me answer your question. Those of you that have 100,000 mile spark plugs, they are a single or a double platinum. They could be an iridium plug, but they're made to last, so they don't deteriorate and transfer metal from the electrode to the electrode. So they do last a while. But here's what we're finding. We're finding that if you wait till 100, 105, 106, when you bring your car in, we have to jackhammer the old ones out. And sometimes the threads come with them because they've been in there. 100,000 miles is 4 times around the equator. That's a lot of miles. So when they bring the threads out, we have to pull the head and re-put a new thread set in the head. And you've just gone from what might be a $200 repair to a $2,000 repair. It just depends. So this is what I tell my family. This is what I tell my customers. This is what I tell the people that mean a lot to me, including my customers, is we'd like to change those plugs about 75 or 80,000 miles. And if anything else, let's take them out, take them for a walk, clean up the threads, and put them back in. If you want to get 100 out of them, that's fine. But let's take them out a little bit early. And on the double platinums, the single platinums are kind of a Fred Flintstone plug. A double platinum means we got platinum on both electrodes, which means it's not going to wear, and the gap will stay the same forever and ever and ever. And the iridiums, they take less electricity, but they give us more burn time. So you might have 2 kilowatts of electricity, and the burn time on a regular plug might be 0.9 milliseconds, not even a full millisecond. But with the iridium plug, we're going to drop that electricity being sent, and we're going to double the burn time. It could go from 0.9 to 0.1, 0.6, 1.7, 1.8. So those are the difference. Now, as you well know, there's spark plugs out there that are $25 a piece. So a 4-cylinder, that isn't too bad, but when there's an 8-cylinder, that's a little tough to swallow.
One minute.
Of course, it has everything to do with when are you going to sell the car or are you going to keep it forever. If your intention is to bail at 100,000 miles, why don't you let the next person put the plugs in it? But if you're going to keep it and you like the car, then I'm saying 75, 80, 85 at the latest. Let's go ahead and take them out so that we don't have to jackhammer them out. Hope that answered your question, Bob, and thank you for holding as long as you did. Gary, I can't get to you, but if you'll give me your question real quick, I think I can handle that.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning. Yes, I've got a 97 Ford F-250, and I've got issues with my electric windows. When I bought the truck used, all four of them went down. It's a four-door. Now there's just the driver's and passenger front go down, and yesterday I went to get an emissions test,
okay,
and I couldn't get the driver's to go
okay
down.
Okay, hold on. You hang on tight, because I'm going to get to you in about a minute and a half to 2 minutes, but I only got 6 seconds left. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, I'm Bob Jones, owner of Quality Transmission Service.
Okay, Mark, Gary's...
on an old Chase lounge, backed into my spot at the drive-in show. You know, a cargo light gives off a romantic glow.
Yeah, romantic glow on a cargo light. Whatever happened to drive-in movies, you know what I mean? Those of us that remember those, remember that was just part of life. That was the best part of life. All righty, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by a great place. Up in North Phoenix, Kurtz Auto Repair. They have years of experience, domestic, import, gas, diesel, motorhomes, big cars, small cars. They're located at I-17 and Bell in Phoenix. They've been in business for a very long time, 1992, and they've been a member of, in good standing with the Better Business Bureau. So again, if you're up there near I-17 and Bell and you're looking for a good repair shop, a repair shop where the owner and his family work there, then you ought to try Kurtz Auto Repair. Okay, Gary, on your power windows, you got a couple of choices here. You can take your car into a repair shop and hope like heck they can diagnose this correctly. But you're going to look them in the eye and you're going to say, I don't want to pay for guesses. I only want fixes.
Sure.
Or you can do what everybody else seems to do and you go buy a lock cylinder, that doesn't do it. Then you buy a switch for one of the back doors, and then you're told the other switch controls that switch, so you buy that switch. And by the time you're done, you spent, and you've blown 2 weekends, your wife is mad at you, your credit card's at your limit, and it's still broken. You could get a wiring diagram, which will tell you how the power flows, but let me give you an example. When you go to lock on the master switch, on most vehicles, that signal goes through a door latch that tells it the door's closed. And then from there it goes to the lock cylinder. And the lock cylinder is nothing more than a solenoid that goes chick and locks the door. But it won't get past that door switch if the door switch is lying and saying that the door is open. Now, it could be that you're being told, or your brain underneath the dash is being told, that both rear doors are open, or that one of them's bad and the other is open. There's so many things that can happen that can make this be ugly. To repair your kind of problems, I've replaced the master switch. Not too long ago, we replaced a backseat switch to repair a backseat problem on the other side of the car, because the power flow on the ground came through the driver's side rear and went to the passenger side rear. So it was being blocked on the driver's side rear. And when we call the customer and say, I want to replace the switch on the driver's side door on the rear, they go, Mark, you're supposed to be working on the passenger side door rear. And then I have to explain to them, trust me on this one. It's not a guess, it's a fix. So, and if you have a scanner, depending on the year and make model of the car, we can sometimes get in the middle between the computer and say, okay, tell us what the doors are doing right now. Oh, number 3 door's not shut. You open it, slam it, it's still not shut. You look, you put cardboard on top of the switch, you shut it again, and it goes, oh, now it's shut. I need to adjust that door switch. But a lot of cars don't even have the door switches exposed in the button format like we used to have. A lot of them have the switch in the latch. So we have to take the door panel off to get to the switch at the latch. So it's on a 1 to 10 scale. If you changed a water pump on a small block Chevy or a small block Ford, on a 1 to 10 scale, that's about a 5. This job is going to be a 7 or an 8. And
yeah, I replaced the master switch already, and that didn't do it. That was my first guess.
And what we have to do is we have to take the door panels off, and then we have to start from the master switch, and we'll ask for a complete lock. And we're going to see, is there power? Oh, you know what? We got power going to the solenoids. Well, how can that be? Oh, they're going to trigger the ground off of the master switch. So we're going to feed power to both rear solenoids, but we're going to use the ground to complete the circuit. Oh, I got it now. So then let me look at this wiring diagram and let me find out where that... Oh, that ground goes to the relay. So what's happening is the master switch triggers the relay, and the relay has 4 coming out of it for each one of the doors. Oh, look here. There's a joint underneath the passenger seat. That's got to be bad, because that's where it splits off to the 2 front doors and to the rear doors. So you pull the carpet up, you get to that joint, and you go, yep, that's where it is. It's one of those deals where it costs $150 to find it and 10 cents to fix it.
Do you have anybody in the Northwest Valley you suggest?
Yeah, I want you to go to MarkSalem.com and just click on the Northwest Value. There's two guys up there that I can think of right off the bat. Mike's Auto Tech, he can handle this. Ian Hugh Tire and Auto, he can handle this. Kurtz, Thunderbird Auto. Okay. Just pick a place that's close to you. I've got them all in the Northwest Value. But here's the deal. You look them in the eye and you say, I don't want to pay for no guessing. How much did that master switch cost you?
I bought it through my son who worked at a body shop, and it was still $60-$70.
Okay. Like, all right. Well, thank you for tell your son that's what sons are for, good for, especially
right.
when they're in the automotive industry. All right. Thanks a lot, Gary.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. Steve, you're up next. Steve, how are you today?
Hi, Mark. I'm great. Thanks for your show. You do a great job.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have a question on a 2000 Trooper with 135,000 miles, automatic four-wheel drive, and it's come to a situation where it died of my wife last week. And the check engine light came on. Some power light came on, and I ran the codes on that, and it said the throttle position sensor.
Okay.
And so I changed that this morning, actually, and I started it up at high idle. It went up like 2,500 RPM a couple times, then it idled down, and it ran for like 15 seconds, and it stopped, and it was clicking like a solenoid.
Okay.
So I turned the power off, and one of the other fixes I read about was because the computer's under the hood, I guess the heat affects the wiring on this unit.
Uh-huh.
And so I unplugged both both big plugs on my computer, plugged it back in, and the car runs great. Okay. So I don't know if I did something right or wrong. Or also, I have to replace the intake manifold gas, but that was another problem with that here.
Okay. All right. You'll find out. Here's what you may have done. You may have just rebooted the system. There's a good chance you didn't disconnect the battery when you replaced the TPS.
You're right.
So the system still has the memory. So when you start it up, the computer's lost control of the TPS. And the computer's looking at the chart and it goes, well, the old one said 0.4. This one says 1.4. Huh. Well, 1.4 on the chart is 2,500 R's. So I need to put it at 2,500. You see my point?
Yeah.
So when you disconnected the two big harnesses on the PC, you just rebooted the system. So now we have to start from scratch. You're idle. If I'm right and you did right, then it'll take it a 3, 4, 5 days to situate everything. Now, we have to have idle in drive, idle in neutral. Then we have to have idle air conditioning on in drive and in neutral. So we've got four different idle positions that the TPS and the computer have to learn together. So if I were you, I'd take the negative cable off, go inside, watch television for 15 minutes, come back, put the negative cable on, reset your radio stations and your seat controls, and that would give it a really good boot. If you take both cables off, now hear me straight here, you have to have both cables off of the battery. If you touch the cables together after you've disconnected them from the battery, it discharges all the capacitors and all the memory, and it gives you a really clean boot. Then you let it sit for 5 minutes and put them back on. Positive first, negative second. Okay?
Yep.
Okay, good luck to you.
But what do you think the problem was, though? Any idea?
Well, it depends. You skipped an important part. I would have plugged in a digital voltometer to the old scan or to the old TPS, and I would have looked at what we call minimum idle authority. We have to synchronize three things: the throttle blades, the TPS, and the idle air control motor.
Oh, okay.
And that's called minimum idle. So I would go in there and I'd say, ooh, we're way out of whack. I mean, it's showing 0.7, and it really should be 1.1. And over here, I should be idling at 800, and I'm at 1100, or I'm 500. But the power bothers me because you said you had a power code.
A power TPS code, yeah.
Okay. If you had a TPS code, then if it died, it wouldn't restart at all?
No, it would restart, and as soon as you put it in drive, it would stop.
Okay. I would think that you got a 75 to 85% chance of fixing the car the way you did it.
Okay. Well, you were in great help. I appreciate it. Okay. I'm going to do the battery thing, like you said. Just touch the positive and the negative together.
Yeah, but off the battery, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, and then and wait 5 minutes, you said, and then put them back together?
Yep, and then the more you drive it, the better off it'll get.
Great, Mark. Thanks for your help.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Scott, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Okay.
On the GMs with the extended cranking hard start, would putting a higher amperage battery affect that?
All right. I need you to describe to me, when you say hard extended cranking, are you talking about sometimes
where it's been diagnosed the fuel pump being bad?
Okay. Here's
what I've got is a 99 Cavalier.
Okay.
And it had the problem, I guess. I noticed that the battery I took out was less than 500 cranking amps, and the battery I put in is over 800. It will still, on the initial start, it will still crank a little bit excessively, not as much as it did before. But on starts after that, it starts right up now.
Okay.
Like it's supposed to.
You've given me a great, I wish, the women usually give me this. The men just tell me how to fix their cars, but the women will give me symptoms. Here, let me think out loud. First of all, on the first start in the morning, it sounds like your cranks longer than normal. It doesn't. It goes and then it fires.
And before I changed the batteries, before I put this battery in, it did it all the time.
Okay. Now the battery, in order for you to crank the motor over, we have to have at least 9.6 in the battery, 9.6 volts. I can't imagine that the battery had anything to do with this, because you would have seen it in the starting circuit and not the fuel circuit. Now, the fuel pump needs 9 volts, which is less than the starter needs. It needs 9.6. So I don't think it has anything to do with this, but I'll tell you what I'm thinking. You said, first thing in the morning, it's been sitting a long time, is when I get the extended cranking. It goes crank, 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 crank a long, long time. But
right,
after
right now.
Throughout the day, it's fine. Well, there's two problems. The fuel pressure regulator on your Cavalier and the fuel pump, there's a valve in the back of the fuel pump to maintain pressure. Mm-hmm. So if I were the tech working on your car, I'd say bring it in the night before. And I want to run some fuel pressure tests on it, but I'm going to leave the gauge on all night long. And when I get there the next morning, I better have 40 pounds in it. If it's zero, then I'm going to say, hey, I want it for another night. And I'm going to pinch off the return line with some needle-nose vice grips. And the next day, I still have pressure. So I'm going, okay, I'm returning fuel to the tank, and it's dumping the pressure that I built up before I shut it off. So you try this. Stick the key in the ignition. Turn it to the on position. Count to three. Turn it off. Not crank position, just on position.
Yeah, I know that trick. I do it.
Okay, and if you do that three times and then it hits and starts, you're repriming the system. So mm-hmm. The question is where's the leak? Is it an injector that's leaking overnight and filling a cylinder full of fuel, which would give you black smoke and it would give you a little bit of a stink in the morning, and it would probably run rough for a second or two?
Now, I had the injectors. I took the injectors out, had them serviced, put them back in before we started driving this car, so they should be okay.
Yeah, unless they have an $8,000 piece of equipment, then I'm not going to take that as being valid.
Yeah, that I don't know.
Okay, because we have the ability, and you have to check the injectors both electronically and amp draw and resistance value and spray pattern and pressure release. And you can see that if somebody cleaned them up for $30, then we're going to charge $200 or $300 to run through a set of injectors. And by the way, your Cavalier, is it a four-cylinder or a V6?
A 2.2.
Okay. That 800 CCA cranking battery is about four times bigger than you need, because you're supposed to just match the cubic inches of the motor. So
the reason I did it, I just junked the car. And that battery was good. The battery that was in the Cavalier was like 5 years old.
Oh, okay.
Still working great.
Yeah.
But, you know, getting that 5 years old, I'm thinking, well, this thing's about ready to go any time. It's my daughter's car, and I didn't want her left somewhere with it.
So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to the fuel rail and try to find the pressure relief valve. It'll have a vacuum.
Like,
all right. I want you to take the vacuum line off, sniff it, and look inside of it with a flashlight. If the vacuum line is wet, if it smells like gas, or if there's anything that leaks out of it, the pressure relief valve's bad, it's leaking pressure back to the tank, and you have just found your problem. And you have to raise your right hand and make a donation to your charity on behalf of yourself for free diagnosis, okay?
Thanks, sir.
All right, good luck to you. Bye-bye. All right, I want to tell you about a body shop real quick, and then we're going to go to Roger, because we've got time. The body shop I want to talk about is Phoenix Body Works. And I want to tell you something. It's really important when you have your car wrecked, whether you wrecked it or somebody else hit you, that the person that's going to fix your car doesn't sell you down the stream, because the insurance company wants to cut corners, but the body shop doesn't, and you don't want anyone cutting corners. All you want is put me back the way you found me. Phoenix Body Works is a great place. They have the finest frame and unibody equipment, and when you're getting your repair, they work with your insurance company to make sure it's put back together the right way, on time, affordable price, and quality parts. They're hassle-free, insurance company friendly. They know how to work on your car, and they know how to work with your insurance company. Half mile north of Deer Valley off 19th Avenue. So 19th Avenue in Deer Valley. If you need some body work, new paint job, or just something done small, contact Phoenix Body Works. Okay, Roger, you're up.
Yes, I'll be quick. You're awesome.
Okay.
I have a Suzuki Vitara, 123,000 miles on it, 03. Catalysts are like the TO 420.
Yep.
And I looked at it. It's got two converters on the side of the manifolds, and they have one in the rear, and plus four sensors.
Yeah. There's a sensor in the front and a sensor in the back. The sensor in the front is going to report the absence of oxygen because there's lots of fuel. But as that exhaust goes through the catalytic converter, the fuel is consumed. So you would expect that the O2 sensor at the back of the catalyst is going to be yelling, lots of air, lots of air. So the one in the front, on a 1 to 10 scale, with fuel being, 1 to 10, with 1 being no fuel, 10 being full of fuel. The one in the front's going 999, and the one in the back goes 0101. One of them's lying. So the one in the front's dead, and it's yelling 111, and the back one's yelling 111, and the computer's going, one of you idiots is bad. Or the one in the front says 9, and the one in the back says 9, and the catalyst is bad. or one of them's lying. And that's what you have to figure out. That catalyst on your Suzuki is going to be over $1,000, I'm guessing.
Yes, I see that. There's three all together. And then the four-wire sensors, how do I test that? I was looking on your site.
I've got to run. Mark at MarkSalem.com. Mark at MarkSalem.com. You call me or write me and I'll help you. All righty. Where are we at? Where are we at on time?
It's time to wrap it up.
All righty. Well, folks, I messed up, and I'm sorry I took the show late, but Mark at MarkSalem.com, thanks for spending your Saturday with me.